Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dream has come true.
All of you spoke to me.
You're about to find out how ugly mankind can really be.
Myself and the clique are gonna dance all over your face.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. Back once again with the Renegade Master, D4 Damager, power to the people. We are here via our Eika Pro Power DeLorean, investing and regressing to 1996 in the world of the World Wrestling Federation's flagship Monday Night Programmette. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell, joined once again by the mulligan to my O'Hare, the Clive Fuck of professional wrestling retro reviews, the one and only Jackie Orlando, Jack Atkins. Jackie Orlando, how you doing? Happy New Year, Jackie Orlando!
Hello, hello, hello. Sick bars there. Were you Wolfie D or is it JC Ice? Whichever fucker.
Little bit of both.
Bit of both.
We're coming at you live and in colour. Don't diss the man or we will bum rush your mother. No one needs that in their lives, though. Not this early into the year.
At least you remembered the word rush there, Tom. Otherwise, that would have been a lot different.
Oh, we would have been back in prison. Now, the thing is, you're hearing this on Monday, the 15th of January. You didn't hear this, but I wished Jack Atkins a Happy New Year at the start, which is illegal now because we are so deep into January. There's no point. But as it was the first time that I'd seen you, it felt appropriate to wish you a Happy New Year.
Hmm.
I won't anymore.
Thanks.
I have another question, though.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Another question of great importance. So your good lady, without giving too much of the game away, is in the midwifery game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I was speaking to my taxi driver. Well, not mine. He's everybody's. He just happened to be mine this morning. He was telling me that his goddaughter is doing midwifery and that she has to be part of 40 births before she passes the bar to be a midwife. So my question to the taxi driver, and he couldn't give me an answer, so I will put this to you. You may want to ask Sean this, right? If you deliver triplets, does that count as one of your deliveries or three?
It would count as three, but you wouldn't be allowed to do that as a student because that would have a doctor-led delivery because it requires surgery.
Ah.
He's on top of the game. Let's go.
He's done it. So would it be the same with twins?
Potentially, yes, because it is a more high-risk birth. The student would still be in the room to know how it goes, but it's more of a case of, I know there's... They call them your catchers, 40 catchers. You catch the baby as it flies out. But there could be like a situation where you've passed all your exams, you're just waiting to get those last ones. And basically, if you're in that position, say if you've got like 9 left to go, they'll bring you in on a shift and they'll be like, sit there. Anytime anyone's given birth, you're in. And they'll just like run them from room to room just to catch it, cut. There you go, catch, cut.
Wow. So, yeah. The speed of it, that's amazing. I love that. Well, that's
it's a tough job.
It is, because, you know, I'm clumsy at the best of times. I couldn't handle the stress of being a catcher of a baby.
Oh, no, Sean's clumsy as shit when she's not in a hospital. It's fucking ridiculous. Yeah.
She's the right woman. And here we are, right, you and I, Jack Atkins, catching the baby that is 2024. The new year is born.
Yeah.
2023 is dead. It died. Buried it, and a new baby is here for us to raise together as we guide ourselves and you listening in your ears or watching with your eyes through Monday Night Raw's earlier years. And we're nearly done with 1996. The final flurry of December is on the horizon, and it does feel like a million years since we've done this, but I think the order now is I'll tell you some of the things happening in the boring real world before we get into anything else.
yes, that is. Yeah, that is.
Thank you for the reassurance.
Yeah. I was watching you in awe there. I was like, I could see the cogs turning. I was like, he's fantastic. He could just keep this spinning. I would have just stopped.
Thanks, mate. I'm worried because, like, in about 2 weeks' time, the cogs gain a little bit more rust because it's my birthday coming up. And I turn 40. In a few weeks' time, which it just makes me, and I know that there's older and I know there's younger, but oh, it makes me feel weird turning 40.
Yeah, one of my mates is turning, well, a few of my mates are turning 40 this year, but one of them in particular, we've been telling him he's the wrong age for years. So this year we were just like, can't believe you didn't do anything big for your 40th last year, and he was like, what? And he was like, so. So we're going to Berlin in May, and I just put in the group chat this morning. I was like, you only turned the big 4-1 once, big man. And he's like, no, stop that now.
I like that a lot. I'm hoping someone tells me that they've lied about my age. That would be great, but they haven't. So here we go. Right, let's go back to 1996. Simpler times, Jack Atkins. Stop laughing at me. It's been ages. So let's go back to 1996, December the 9th. Number one movie in the UK is Jingle All the Way.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Because it's weird to be still talking about Christmas, but we kind of are.
Yeah, and it's wrestling adjacent because, of course, everyone's favourite flip-flopper Paul White, he's there as a big, big man.
He does indeed. He stars as Giant Santa, who brawls with Arnie in this film, alongside, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, as the deadbeat dad on the hunt for his son's favourite toy just days before Christmas. He also stars along Sinbad, who plays Arnie's adversary, Myron. Phil Hartman, who plays Arnie's neighbour. A brilliant bit of casting with Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
Put the cookie down! Jim Belushi plays a mall Santa in it as well. Now, funny enough, Arnie wasn't meant to be in this film, Jack Atkins.
Who was meant to be the lead?
I can't tell you, because I don't know. But what I do know... what I do know is that Arnie was signed on to do a remake of Planet of the Apes. That was meant to shoot at the same time as Jingle All the Way. So he initially turned it down. But then the Planet of the Apes remake kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed. And as it happened, the stars aligned and the Jingle All the Way production was sort of in the right frame of time where Arnie was free. So he ended up doing that anyway.
I mean, I would have hoped that Arnie would have been an ape rather than a human. Because get your stinky hands off me, you damn dirty ape. I prefer it if he was like General Ursus, the gorilla leader. He's like, the only good human is a dead human. He's riding a horse.
Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger as Dr. Seuss.
Oh, imagine that.
Sinbad wasn't meant to be in it either.
It was Jimmy Corkill.
Sadly, no. Sadly, it was not another Brookside character. That would have been. It was the other Sinbad. Who thought it? The original casting called for Joe Pesci.
Oh, okay.
To play
yeah.
Myron. Ultimately, they moved away from Pesci because Sinbad was a better height match for Arnie.
Yeah. That's definitely a thing, isn't it?
Now, I promise you this isn't just the Cultaholic Classic Jingle All The Way review, but I've just got quite a bit of gumph about it here. The screenwriter Randy Cornfield was inspired to make the film because he saw his in-laws going to a toy store to try and track down a sought-after Power Ranger toy and all the fun and frivolity that comes from that year that Power Rangers was the big toy. And he said, this could be a great film, all about commercialism at Christmas. However, it would be a few years later that Murray Hill Publishing would sue 20th Century Fox, claiming the idea for the film was stolen from a screenplay they had purchased from high school teacher Brian Webster, entitled Could This Be Christmas?
They said, according to Wikipedia, that the script had 36 similarities with Jingle All the Way. It included the plot, it included some of the dialogue, and even some of the character names. Murray Hill president Bob Laurel bought the script in 93, sent it to Fox, said, here's a good idea for a film. Fox responded with nothing, and then went, oh, unrelated, here's a film called Jingle All the Way. Now, Fox was found guilty of stealing and they ended up having to pay $19 million. That's $15 million in damages and $4 million in legal costs. However, Laurel Webster was set to receive a portion of this money, but he died a few months after the verdict and never got a penny of it. On appeal, the damages figure was lowered to just $1.5 million before the verdict itself was ended up ultimately being quashed in 04 because a judge decided that the idea itself wasn't stolen. Fox had bought Cornfield's screenplay before he or anybody else at Fox had read Could This Be Christmas? So it was just a case of mere coincidence as opposed to James Somerton-esque plagiarism. And
I can't believe the other Could This Be Christmas script actually had a character in it called Arnold Schwarzenegger. Who the thunker?
There's one line where he goes, put the biscuit on the ground and it's fine. And it called for giant haystacks as opposed to Paul White. Now, the movie holds an approval rating of 20% on Rotten Tomatoes. The BBC's Neil Smith criticised the film's script, saying its focus on commercialism of Christmas was negative, and also said Schwarzenegger's performance had the comic timing of a dead moose. So not many people liked it, but it's one of those films that genuinely is part of Christmas, as far as I'm concerned. We watch it every year.
It's one of those that if you see it as a kid, it's matter. Like, I was amazed when I grew up to find out that two of my childhood favorites, Ghostbusters 2 and Hook, were both just like not liked films, but for our generation we love them because we grew up with them.
We did, but they were it was not a beloved in that time period. Very, very strange. Same as how Hocus Pocus was very dismissed first time round.
Yeah, it's oh, go on.
Because only because it wasn't released at Halloween. It was moved to earlier. I think it was moved to the summer of the year that it was due out, in favour of Disney pushing The Nightmare Before Christmas. So Hocus Pocus really didn't do that well on its first run, but it remains as part of Halloween lore now.
It's like myself as well. I'm a Star Wars boy, but only the original three films. And obviously you'll remember as well when the prequels came out, we were all like, these are shit. And then the sequels came out, and now you've got this whole generation who grew up with the prequels saying, the sequels are shit, the prequels are where it's at. Whereas me, who's the younger end of the old guard, are just like, you're all talking absolute bank.
Nostalgia ain't what it used to be, mate.
Yeah.
It ain't what it used to be. Our number one movie in the US this week is 101 Dalmatians. It's the live action remake. We talked about it last week with lovely Glenn Close. Number one song in the UK is Peter Andre's I Feel You.
Still, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, he's doing all right. God love him. Number one song in the US is a new one from Tony Braxton. It's Unbreak My Heart.
Oh, save love me again. What an absolute... Oh, right in the... Oh, I'm going to have lie down after this and listen to Tony Braxton and have some kind of, you know, moment in the hall.
Oh, we saw Clive Fuck there on the Patreon put his hand next to his heart, remembering how special this moment was. I put my hand next to my heart because I got palpitations. writer of the song, Diane Warren, said, "ER Tony, this is a song about the ultimate of heartbreak." And Tony Braxton went, "No, I don't want it. Sick of singing about heartbreak." She didn't want it. She actually rejected the song at first. And she got cajoled eventually by Diane Warren to at least sing it. And lo and behold, it became her most iconic song.
Yeah, I don't think I could. It'd take minutes to name me a different Tony Braxton hit.
The dance remix of Unbreak My Heart.
yes, of course.
That's the only other one. Hey, this is cool. The weekend, a few days before Monday Night Raw this week, the Adam and Joe show debuted on Channel 4.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah! There was nothing quite like Adam Buxton and Joe Cornish dicking about on Channel 4.
It's one of those that when my friends and I, when we were in our teenage years, we were just saying, we hated the fact that the industry had moved on so much. Obviously, you know, they come from good backgrounds, went to good schools, etc. But the fact that, like, in the 90s, you could go to Channel 4 and say, hey, how about we have this show where we dick around with Star Wars toys, and we occasionally film things in shops, and we pretend we're in a bedroom. And they're like, yeah, have four series. Whereas now, that would never get made.
I mean, the nice thing is nowadays, if you wanted to make it, you could just make it and upload it somewhere.
True, yeah, it was like a precursor to YouTube in a way, in a very weird way.
They were very ahead of their time with Adam Buxton and Joe Cornish. Of course, Joe Cornish has gone on to be a big old film boy in the States. Adam Buxton is... I still think Adam Buxton's podcast is one of the best podcasts out there. There was such a warmth about his podcast where he just interviewed his mates and just recorded intros and outros whilst walking his dog. Like, yeah. just really wholesome, warm listening was Adam Buxton.
Yeah, I used to like the Six Music Show, Adam and Joe as well.
Yes.
Steven! And all that stuff. Oh, brilliant. And I was gutted when that ended, because obviously, like you said, Joe Cornish became a bit of a mover in Hollywood, so they were just like, oh, that's the end of this now.
Well, he did a bit on Six on his own. He did Adam Buxton's big mixtape, which was a real showcase of his audio production skills, which I personally got a big kick out of.
Yeah. All the silly little garage band songs and all that stuff.
Yeah. He's a boy. Imagine giving Kenny Everett garage band. Oh my God.
I saw Kenny Everett on something the other day, and you'll be happy to know now. Whenever I see comedy and radio legend Kenny Everett, the first thing I think of is one of Tom's biggest influences there.
Oh, yes, mate. Oh, he so is. I love him. There's no art. He did stuff on radio where he would make these silly mixes and these elaborate intros into songs, and he'd do it on reel to reel and just chopping physical tape and recording over his own voice. And oh, give that man Adobe Audition. My God, he'd have taken over the world. So good. The Thursday after this Raw airs, Michael Barrymore back on our tellies with Strike It Rich, the rehash of Strike It Lucky.
It's a pity what happened for all involved, because I was a big fan of Michael Barrymore, but it's for the best that his career never really properly came.
He's a big TikTok star now.
So I've heard, which is odd. Like most things with TikTok, I just see him and just think, oh, yeah, oh, okay, yeah.
It's Barrymore. So that is that is the boring real world, but the wrestling world, far more enticing as we're heading into Christmas. And this is where we throw to Jack Atkins, who, like a midwife, will catch us and he will feed us from his teat the wrestling news courtesy of the Wrestling Observer for this week.
Let me tell you
something, brother.
Let me tell you something, brother Jack. Before we even go into this, I've got 2 pages of notes worth of shite out of the Observer.
Yes.
It was a chunky week, and some of this is hindsight chunky, which is my favourite brand of soup.
Is hindsight like a rip-off version of Heinz?
Whatever you want it to be, Tom Campbell. Tom Campbell's chunky soup. That's what it can be.
I'll take that.
Yeah. So this is the Wrestling Observer newsletter dated December the 16th, 1996. And some of these stories, like I said, at the time didn't mean anything. But as 97 would come on, you'd be like, ooh. And from a 2024 lens, we're like,
That's exactly the noise that you'll make.
The exact noise. Right. You at home, you're listening to this, you're watching on Patreon. If you didn't make that noise, I will find you.
He will.
And I will cry.
Outside your house.
Through a megaphone until one of us is arrested. So anyway, Wrestling Observer newsletter.
We're off to a flying start this year.
Bollocks to you. Right, so... We are heading towards the Royal Rumble, Tom. I didn't know if you were aware of this.
I'm ready for rumbling.
So, WWF bit. As we know, we're going to the Alamo Dome, 71,000 plus seats in the Alamo Dome. And we know that the WWF are working with AAA. So, according to Dave, they've decided to, in his words, put together basically 2 shows in one. The idea is to make the event a joint show, having a complete AAA loaded up house show take place, along with the WWF Royal Rumble and other grudge matches, with some, if not most, of the AAA matches not airing on the actual pay-per-view. So at the time, whether this pans out, we'll have to wait and see. But at least four traditional Mexican-style six-man and four-man tag matches were scheduled for the card, with the names not yet totally finalised the week of the 16th of December. New AAA addition Hector Garza, who apparently jumped from CMLL the past week, will almost surely be one of the names on the card, as will El Hijo del Santo, and top AAA draws that didn't leave the group and are now working for WCW and rival Promo Azteca. As we know, past few months there's been a bit of a fallout. Octagon, Paraguayo, some of these they're hoping will appear. Ooh, lovely little burp there. Wonderful. The current plan is for four AAA wrestlers, Mil Máscaras, Cybernético, Piorot Jr. and Latin Lover to appear in the Rumble itself. And we'd said that they're doing a real push for this in San Antonio, trying to build on the popularity of, obviously, Mil Máscaras and Jose Lothario in the 70s. And Dave said, whether it'll work in 1996, we'll wait and see. And at press time, nearly 6 weeks away from the event, 8,935 tickets have been sold for the event for $153,000. With that many tickets sold so far in advance, there's a good chance it'll be the most tickets sold for a WWF American house show in several years. However, by pushing the 71,000 figure so hard on television, in some people's eyes, it may set up a situation where a crowd of, say, 20 to 30,000, which would have to be considered a phenomenal figure for pro wrestling in this day and age, would be viewed by many as a disappointment. A bit like All In last year. It's like wrestling goes in cycles, kids. It just goes in cycles. So, yeah, to cut through the Dave ease there, AAA house show leading right into the Royal Rumble to try and get that Hispanic crowd, to get the Lucha Libre crowd, to get the crossover fans and the WWF fans all in one roof. So
be interesting to see if that's going to pan out, how that will work out for WWF and for AAA, because they're very different types of wrestling fans watching very different types of wrestling. And the the idea that WWF are leveraging AAA for additional numbers to come to this, to the biggest show, they're a very big show they're putting on, one of the biggest shows they put on in years, coming off the back of what's been a real quiet period for the WWF. Certainly keen to do a number like that. I'm intrigued to see how this pans out. Obviously, we know how Rumble 97 goes. I don't have any recollection of there being any more than a few people in the Rumble. I don't remember there being a house show beforehand, but let's follow the road and see where it takes us.
Yeah, out of those four names said there for the Rumble, obviously, we know infamously, Mil Máscaras will be in there. And I remember the Latin Lover will definitely be in there.
I seem to remember him being in there as well from my numerous times watching Rumble 97.
Numerous times? Is it a Campbell favourite?
It is a Campbell favourite. I have it on VHS.
Yes, he does.
Because I'm of a certain period. I'm of a certain age. And it's in my tape library. It's a good one.
In the vault, the air-conditioned vault.
The air-conditioned Campbell vault.
So we go from WWF. A rare bit of UFC news for you here, Tom. So the bulk of this issue, we just had the 1996 Ultimate UFC tournament. This is old school UFC. We'd fight multiple times in a night rather than like once every 6 months. And you were just probably a horrible bastard with a big mustache. So 1996 Ultimate, Ken Shamrock was the heavy favourite to win. After his first round win over Brian Johnston, he pulled out due to injury. And according to this, he might not be ready to fight again until May 1997. So it's the last time we'll see him in an octagon in 1996. I wonder what will happen to him in 1997,
Tom. Ken Shamrock certainly. I mean, at this point, there has been some mutterings, I'm pretty sure, of Ken Shamrock maybe exploring other avenues.
Yeah.
That may be something that pans out in front of our very eyes sooner rather than later.
So we go from UFC to the totally wild world of WCW. We're hitting everyone this week, by the way. Like I said, we're, oh, fuck me. So we're going WCW. So Rey Mysterio Jr., Psicosis, and Juventud Guerrera have all signed contracts with WCW. Super Carlo, La Parca, and Viado for Halloween and Damien have all signed a letter of intent to sign. Eric Bischoff apparently made a big play to get everyone signed immediately once he realised WWF and AAA were in bed together, since most of the aforementioned wrestlers had contracts with AAA already. So he's just gone, nah, fuck that, come to WCW, I'm not having you appearing in the Rumble. So I'm made up for you and Sam, because... obviously, the cruiserweight division in WCW is vaunted, but 97, 98, going to early 99, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there's some good stuff coming. Super Callow, we've seen starting his WCW journey, it being very suddenly stopped due to injury, but he'll bounce back from that. Obviously, Rey Mysterio in the mix, Juventud Guerrera's in the mix on the classic Nitro review, which is back by now as well. So there's some great names here, and I love how petty the WCW back end is, because they're like, well, WWF are doing a show with AAA. Let's sign up all the Mexican wrestlers.
Yeah. It's again, time is a flat circle. Wrestling is cyclical. In the news this past week, obviously, with Andrade El Idolo leaving AEW, expected to land back in WWE. And apparently the rumours are saying that Tony Khan's gone, all right, then, see you later. We're going to take your money and a bit more. I'll go to Mercedes Moné, so fuck off.
That was exactly what Tony Khan said, word for word.
Exactly. Talking about top businessmen telling people to fuck off. December 96, Hulk Hogan is now on the road selling Thunder Mixes, which are, in Dave's words, really cheap blenders. While on the road... while on the road, he still does his three demandments gimmick. He says he hasn't changed, but wears NWO gimmicks and explains his deal by saying he got tired of all the politics in the big pro wrestling organizations and decides to form his own company. Oh, Hogan.
So hang on, I never heard of Thunder Mixes.
I've heard of it in passing, because obviously Hogan likes to say, however true or untrue this isn't, that he was offered first refusal on the George Foreman grill and said no. And I have heard of him having like some kind of like protein shake mixer thing. So apparently it's the Hogan Thunder Mixer.
I love that. I wonder if you can still get them.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I need to see whether you can still get a Hulk. Because like... It makes it's on brand for Hogan to sell some shite like this. Like, I'm gobsmacked he turned down the grill.
If he did indeed turn down the grill.
You've got to remember
this is Hogan. Yeah.
Yep, here it is. The Hulk Hogan Thunder Mixer. And it says everything you need to know about the item. The top search on Google takes you to wrestlecrap.com.
Yay.
It looks like a Wilco own brand mixer, but with a nice box, and Hulk Hogan showing his pythons on the front. Now you can mix up your favorite recipes anywhere and anytime in just seconds. It's so easy. Just add ingredients, blend, drink. Cheers, Hulk.
Thanks for that, Hogan. I was going to put my... in it, and then you know,
I was gonna put my knob in it. Don't put your knob in a mixer. If you take one bit of advice on this podcast, so I've pulled at the back of the Thunder Mixer box. The secret is the cyclone action. The Hulk Hogan Thunder Mixer rotates an incredible 12,000 RPMs, creating a powerful cyclone effect that actually aerates the liquid and dissolves ingredients in. He's just describing a fucking blender. This amazing thing. It does what a blender does. It blends. Here's how it works. Liquid continuously move around and up the side of the cup. When they reach the top, they fold over and are pulled down into the powerful mixing whisk. It sounds like a punishment for the water. It gets to the top and is folded and pulled back down. Oh my fucking God. Right, it doesn't have a ceiling lid for the thing, Jack Atkins. No. It has a super ceiling lid.
Course, yeah.
There's a description for what it does. Seals in liquids when mixing or transporting.
Fantastic. I thought when you said ceiling lid, it was a lid for your house, otherwise known as a ceiling or roof.
I mean, the one thing that is accurate is it is portable, because it needs two AA batteries, not included, in big capital letters on the back. Oh, I want to be able to blend my drinks in the style of Hulk Hogan everywhere I go. But sadly, all the websites I'm looking at are out of stock.
No,
I'm going to very quickly check eBay and then we'll move on to our next. Oh, there is a vintage retro. Oh, mate.
How much?
Have a guess.
Is it in the box?
Yeah, it's boxed. It looks new.
£65.
Less.
Oh, God. £30.
£23.52.
Oh, shit. Oh,
mate, I might just buy it.
Oh, don't buy it, Tom.
Oh, hang on.
You've got a wedding this year. You've got a wedding this year.
We can take it to the wedding. Make cocktails with it.
It could be your best man.
My best man is a Hulk Hogan Thunder Mixer. Oh, but it's £27 postage. Are you shitting me? Where's it being delivered from? The moon?
Venice Beach, California. I think you're fine, bro.
There's one on here slightly used for £17.
Slightly used. It's got a bit of someone's knob in it.
I feel like I'm just going to get one. One day, you'll just watch a news video and there'll just be one on the table.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. Right.
Sorry. Got sidetracked.
Talking of news on the table, they are going to add a lot of guys to the NWO so they have enough wrestlers to fill a one-hour show without putting Cole and Nash in the ring for 20 minutes every week. The downside is, according to Dave, that it makes the NWO less exclusive as the cool organisation when they start letting guys like Michael Wall Street in.
It's true! It looks shit when they get more people in.
So we go from WCW, a quick All Japan one. So in this week, the Holy Demon Army, which is still the coolest tag name of all time, Akira Taue and Toshiaki Kawada, they won the World Tag League over Mitsuhara, Misawa and Jun Akiyama in the finals. Dave hasn't seen the match at the time of writing, but it does go down as a five-star match. The reason I included this is because I like a bit of 90s All Japan. It's fantastic. It's right up my street. Watch the match. And in the write-up, he said he'd heard that Kawada's match-winning powerbomb on Misawa was said to have been so stiff it was shocking. I checked it out. It wasn't too bad, but, you know, that's not too bad by All Japan standards. It was still probably quite meaty.
You said Dave gave it 5 stars despite not seeing it?
No, he'd given like a write-up saying, I've heard it's good, and then when he does eventually watch it,
right,
he'll give it 5 stars.
I thought he just guessed it was 5 stars.
Again, we're coming off the week after Wrestle Kingdom and reading some of those match ratings. I was like, oh, he's been very generous there. I was like, oh, hang on. Tokyo Dome, the Tokyo Dome tax.
Yeah, it's the Tokyo Dome tax. You had a little bit on top.
Talking of a little on top, we go to ECW for... It's a meaty ECW issue here. We've got a couple here. So... Raven is once again ECW World Heavyweight Champion after defeating the Sandman at the ECW Arena on December 7th. The bloody barbed wire match, described as bloody as hell and very good, that's bloody as hell, not just bloody hell, that's very good, in true ECW fashion, ended when Raven was supposed to pile drive Sandman through a table, but the table broke prematurely, which had happened several times on the show previously and helped ruin Sabu versus Perry Saturn. Yeah, also, though, December 7th, it seemed to be quite an eventful ECW show because John Rickner debuted under the ring name Balls Mahoney, beating Devon Storm in 4 minutes 45. Devon Storm quit the promotion that weekend and will be going back to work in the indie groups over unhappiness about not getting a push. The bit here which surprised me is Balls Mahoney got a good crowd reaction. That doesn't surprise me because people love him. Because of the name, and did something of a comical gay type of act, apparently, according to Dave. Although Paul Heyman told him not to do a specific gay act. Because when you think of Balls Mahoney, you think of, ooh, that man looks like he smells. He could swing a chair rather than just like a kind of...
Yeah, like a stereotype.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But, I love ECW. The ECW documentary that we put out on YouTube over the Christmas New Year period, fantastic work as always. I know that was a pet project of Justin because Justin is a big ECW boy, our friend Justin off of America. But the ECW fans, they get painted as, oh, these all-knowing tape traders who are so passionate about the business. But at this, they were made up to see Balls Mahoney because they got to chant Balls. Yet All Japan Suplex Machine, Gary Albright wrestled the match after, and there were crickets in the building as he was German suplexing people onto the head. So the myth of them being these all-knowing, really, you know, highbrow wrestling fans, I think has been tweaked a little bit.
They just like shouting balls in a public place.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
Talking of balls in a public place, Shane Douglas has so much heat, they don't want him fighting over the guardrail for fear of what might happen. December 7th, Douglas and Francine versus Tommy Dreamer and Bueller. Shane Douglas round up outside the ring. A fan got in Douglas's face and started mouthing off. David heard several versions, but report from someone right there said the fan threw the first punch and Douglas started just punching him repeatedly and attacking him. Brackets, this wasn't an angle. Tommy Dreamer, who the more you see and hear about these situations, is really the unsung hero in this company, since he has calmed down a lot of situations that threatened to get very ugly, managed to pull Douglas away from the problem and tried to get the crowd back in the match. Shane Douglas at this point was furious and broke away, and according to one report, he went back after the fan and either grabbed the wrong fan and threw him down and started battering him until Dreamer pulled him away. Or the second fan clocked him with a bottle. Both Douglas and Francine woke up legitimately injured as Dreamer went for a chair shot to the knee, but instead they had a timing problem and he smashed Shane Douglas in the ankle after he'd battered two fellas. And Francine appeared to suffer some sort of a leg injury, possibly a torn hamstring. So this ECW in 1996,
it's pretty standard ECW. I mean, there's always that argument about getting heat in wrestling, and obviously, you know, as a bad guy, you want people to dislike you. When it becomes life threatening, maybe I'm a snowflake. I don't know, but maybe, you know, if your life's being threatened, maybe you pair it back a touch.
Yeah, maybe. Say that though, all the ECW lads were disciples of Terry Funk, who I'm sure once got stabbed.
That's true.
But we've got some movement in and out of ECW expected over the next few weeks. So on the incoming, Lance Storm is expected to be joining ECW in 1996, well, going into 97. And the Gladiator from FMW, aka Mike Awesome, has said he wants to go to ECW in February. On the way out, WCW have talked with Louis Spicoli, but at this point he hasn't made a move. So we'll wait and see.
So Louis's not long back in ECW because he had he had his run as Rad Radford in the WWF been making a mark in ECW. We'll keep an eye on Spicoli.
Yeah, we will. This one's actually sort of linked. We go to All Japan Women. So this is one just for my own personal So All Japan Women held its year-end spectacular on December the 8th at Tokyo Sumo Hall, drawing a legitimate sellout of 10,500 to see Kyoko Inoue capture the WWWA title for the first time. She pinned Manami Toyota in 24 minutes 52. The reason that I've included this, because reading up, these are Dave's words. The finish saw Inoue invent a new move to Japan, which from the sounds of things would be somewhat similar to the Death Valley driver, aka the Spicoli driver, Louis Spicoli's move. But it's a reversal. So instead of being stomach on shoulders, back to shoulders, drop them down. And as he's put, is said to have looked very dangerous. This is the debut of the Victoria driver, which we know better as the fucking Burning Hammer. So the Burning Hammer has just been... And if you don't know what the Burning Hammer is, fuck me. It's one of those wrestling moves where Kenta Kobashi, I think, only used it 7 times. And it's one of those things that when AEW formed, I'd hope they'd bring it in. They have done a little bit. The idea of a super finisher, a move that you only use when you have to fucking win. But it's a Japanese wrestling trope that I like, but he only used it 7 times. And then, you know, on the indies, in the big indie boom, people, you know, kicking out of it at one and stuff. But it's one of those that when you see it, you just go, oh, that's not right. That's horrible.
Trent Seven uses it as a finish. And I was always convinced that he used it because it sounded a bit like he was saying Birmingham, which is Birmingham, which is just outside Wolverhampton.
If he doesn't call it that, then fuck me. That'd be amazing.
So there's an option. There's a goal there, sir. If you wanted just to kick it in, you may go for it, sir.
Well, as we know, Trent Seven signed to TNA. Now I'm sure you could have a word with him and be like, A up, cocker, duck, monkey, whatever you call each other in the Midlands. Spag. Come here. Birminghammer.
Spag. I can have a word with his tag partner, aka former house guest, Speedball Mike Bailey.
Of course, I can't believe you. I was going to text you because I peeked behind the gate and I got a text from Tom, a lovely picture of friends of the channel, Speedball Mike Bailey and Vader Scott playing with Pablo. I was going to say, I can't believe you made them take off their shoes in the flat. But then I stopped myself because I was like, wow, I can't believe Speedball Mike Bailey outside the ring wears shoes. So
it's true. Hey, look, he might be the best wrestler in the world. And Vader Scott might be one of the best commentators in the world, but we have a shoe policy in our place.
Yeah. Stick to your guns, Bab.
Absolutely. Spag. Absolutely. Spag. Just the West Midlands terminology. Spag. Stick to your guns. They were lovely, by the way. They were lovely guests.
Yeah.
We went to the wrestling. Mike just casually had the match of the year 3 days into January.
Of course.
Which is just what he does. It was amazing to call commentary with Vader Scott in person for the first time because we do commentary for North, but it's normally over Zoom. To be sat next to Vader as we did it was great. Great fun.
It's be-
we don't suck better together.
Than be sat- I was going to say, it'd be better than being sat next to Big Van Vader because he'd stink.
he did have a history of having a bit of a smell. And then we... Then we went back and we, what did we have for tea? We ordered a bunch of stuff. We ordered wraps, I think. We ordered meat wraps, not the Vince McMahon ones, from a Lebanese place, and just talk shit till about 1 a.m. It was great.
Oh, bloody meat wraps. I've already got, this is just the best of bollocks. Obviously, we like to keep our ears to the ground on the UK independent scene, and you yourself are a vital part of it.
Am I? But, holy shit.
I'd say you are, yeah.
Terrifying.
But Merseyside Massacre, have you heard this? In February 2024 in Liverpool, a four-way match. Mao versus Jordan Oliver versus Leon Slater versus Yoshihiko the fucking doll.
Oh my god! I hadn't heard that!
See, my beautiful baby boy Luke Osborne sent me the actual match card because I just saw Yoshihiko's coming to Liverpool and it's the road over where I've got my studio space in town. I was like, well, I'm fucking going. And then when I saw, Leon Slater's going to be wrestling him as part of a four-way, I was like, this is going to be incredible.
It sounds amazing!
Yoshihiko, mate.
Are you going to the show?
I'm going to go, yeah! Yes. I haven't booked tickets, yes, because I've just booked one holiday. I'm about to book a second holiday. So I've got to be a bit boring and sensible until at least February.
But how exciting, though.
Very talking of exciting, one last bit of news for you. And it's from the bollocks category. Are you ready for some New Year's bollocks?
Born for bollocks, mate.
So... all Dave's words. A totally weird situation occurred at an indie show on December 8th in Woodbridge, VA, which is Virginia. Yeah, nice. Had to remember then. When the promoter of the card no-showed and nobody got paid, and they basically told the fans what had happened. Sabu and Rob Van Dam were scheduled to headline and both simply decided not to work since no one was getting paid. Stevie Richards, Blue Meanie, Axel Rotten and the Headbangers took over the show and did a bunch of comedy spots, such as Nick Patrick Ref parodying... the word is parody there, Dave. And pretending to do a match with Hogan versus Warrior spots. At one point, several of the wrestlers were in the ring while an explicit Adam Sandler song was playing and they were all pretending to wank. At another point, the wrestlers were doing a pass the hat for money with the fans answering questions for $1 a piece. When Rotten was asked how he got the scars on his arm, he said that he cut up a Gillette razor blade, taped it to his hand and cut up his shoulder while his opponent was hitting him with a baseball bat. The gangsters worked, running in wearing street clothes and beating up Richards and Meanie in 30 seconds. After the match, Richards and Meanie turned on each other and did Hogan and Warrior spots back and forth on each other. Bollocks, mate. Absolute bollocks.
And again, the thing you've come back to a few times in this, the idea that, you know, wrestling's cyclical, it always comes back around. I'm sure a similar incident happened last year. Where the promoter did a runner with the money and the talent just went, this is part of a silly show.
Yeah. It's a testament to, even though, you know, the wrestlers are there, they're out of pocket, they're just like, well, we can't punish the fans. Let's give them something at least. And I bet the fans who still talk about that event, it's like, do you remember all the Blue Meanie versus Stevie Richards, Hogan versus Warrior? Brilliant. What a night.
Pay your talent, though. Come on.
Jesus
Christ. If you're a promoter, pay your f***ing wrestlers. It's not much to ask. Right. So thank you to Jack Atkins for going through the Wrestling Observer pigeon scratch for 1996. What's exciting is now we start a new era for the Wrestling Observer. Dave Meltzer has talked about this and said that now that the Wrestling Observer newsletter will no longer be in print form, it can be as long as he wants it to be. And I was like, I thought it was pretty long already.
Yeah. So a peek behind the curtain. Obviously on Fridays, it's one of our busiest days because love him or hate him, Dave Meltzer, you can get stories out of him, whether it's stuff he said, whether it's stuff that ties into something else, whether it's his take on things, whether he's accurate or not, whether he is your cup of tea or not, he has got enough clout and name in there that people want to hear what he says. Again, end of the day, it's one man's opinion. So on Fridays when it comes out, I know you have a look at it sometimes, if not every week, for the stuff for the YouTube news videos, but Aidan Gibbons pours over it. And Jesus Christ, he was not happy with the latest one, the first fully digital edition, because I think it took him an hour and 20 minutes to read it.
What a joy. Anyway, let's go back to December 1996 before we get into Raw. Tom watches Superstars on 3x speed, so Ooh. You don't have to.
As in Superstars on 3x speed, or you've had 3 hits of speed?
Bit of column A, bit of column B. Okay. Either way, about 9 seconds passed and I'd watch the whole thing. So Superstars airs the night before Raw on syndication. I think it's on a lot of channels. And so I always like to take a little peek because sometimes they'll give you a few little storyline flicks and flex that we don't get on Raw. So on Superstars for Sunday, December the 8th, Rocky Maivia beats T.L. Hopper, who had Jim Cornette in his corner. Rocky getting a little bit of revenge against Jim Cornette, who tried to embarrass him last week on Superstars. So Rocky's got a little something going on Superstars away from Monday nights, but he's ticking over.
It's a bit like in 2024.
Just like in 2024, because he's... I mean, are we getting Rock Roman at Elimination Chamber or at WrestleMania?
I watched the Bischoff business podcast this week, and him and John Alba were saying if it was them, they'd do Elimination.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Elimination Chamber rather than WrestleMania. And loads of people are calling them idiots, but I agree with them. WrestleMania is WrestleMania. It sells itself. If you want to have people flocking to be like, oh shit, if they're having The Rock wrestle in Australia, what's going to happen when they come to France? What's going to happen when they come to Germany? From a business perspective, it's a great idea. From an audience perspective, considering the main market is America, maybe not, but I'd go for Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, me too. That feels like... Yeah. And I'm sure I'd read somewhere that in the early conversations between WWE and the Australian tourism sector, it was they were keen to get The Rock over for something.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
this lines up quite nicely.
Yeah, the way that WWE are moving forward and their business moves in the past year have been incredible, but they are finally realizing that the first W stands for world. They're taking the global expansion seriously. They're selling out arenas for every event. Stadiums for every event. Whereas it used to be you'd get a stadium for definitely WrestleMania, the very, very rare Royal Rumble, like in 97, and SummerSlam. Now they're just like, why not have Backlash in a 60,000 stadium next year if we want? Why not have Elimination Chamber in front of 70,000 people in Australia? If they're going to make every show massive, they need to bump them. So, yeah, I can understand why they would if they did.
All about that. We do get, it's funny enough you're saying that, we get a nice recap of the WWF International Tour of the UK and the UAE, which saw Bret Hart winning the Dubai Cup. It was just a mini tournament they held. We get a nice bit of B-roll of the wrestlers frolicking in international waters and Mankind sat in the desert, just cross-legged, screaming about wanting to go home.
Yeah, we do see that momentarily. Raw as well, and it was genuinely creepy.
Very creepy.
Yeah.
Savio Vega beats Bert Centeno with relative ease. They're teasing Savio versus Crush for next week on Superstars. Diesel and Razor Ramon beat Brian Walsh and Tony Roy. We get our first sighting of British Bulldog in 2024 on Superstars. He and Owen Hart do a picture-in-picture where Bulldog doesn't really say anything particularly hilarious, but he does say the bigger they are, the harder they fall, and then tenses his muscles. That's a good line from Bulldog. Thanks, mate. Try again next week. Ahmed Johnson in the ring promises to take down the Nation of Domination. We have a hilarious bit here where the Nation's music hits and JC Ice and Wolfie D start rapping, "We are the Nation of Alive and Colour. Don't dismantle." They appear on the stage, like above the entrance, like in like almost the skybox of the arena, and they walk out, and JC Ice and Wolfie D stand either side of Farouk and Clarence Mason. Then they finish their rap. Farouk stands there and stares at Ahmed Johnson. And Ahmed's in the ring screaming, "You're going down." And there's a pause. Farouk doesn't say anything. The Nation's music starts again. And JC Ice and Wolfie D just start, "We are the Nation coming live, man." So they just start rapping again. And then as they walk through, it's like they realize there's no point to carry on rapping. Because they get through the curtain. This is real not playing. Farouk is the man. Get your knees up. Just completely peter out. Just made me chuckle. Doug Furness and Phil LaFon beat the Headbangers. The Headbangers are kind of already formed. Like the Headbangers that we're seeing on Superstars with music and attire is the Headbangers that we're going to see for the next like 4 years.
Yeah. With Rad Radford's old music as well.
Is it Rad Radford's old music?
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah, because I think in my time reviewing Raw with you, Tom, that we had like a couple of weeks of Rad Radford before he was out of the company. I remember when he came out with the music, I was like, "Oh, Headbangers music."
You are right. Yeah. Yes, there you go. And in the main event, Bart Gunn beat Triple H by disqualification for the Intercontinental title. This is heavily mentioned on Raw this week after a run-in from Billy Gunn. Mark Mera then makes the save, and that's how Superstars goes off the air, with Bart Gunn coming within a whisper of becoming the IC champion. Anyway, that was Superstars. Gives you a little painting of where things are at. But as we get into Monday Night Raw, a video package hypes up our main event for Raw on Monday, December the 9th, 1996. It is Undertaker versus Mankind in a no-holds-barred match.
And don't forget as well, beforehand, even though you claim that we're not, we're in the Attitude Era because it starts with a screen that says, "Viewer discretion is advised for this episode of Monday Night Raw."
I was going to ask you, that's new, isn't it? I've not seen that before.
No, I've not seen that before either. Because I don't think this episode was particularly too violent either. Obviously we'll come on to the main event, but let's wait and see.
No title card, straight into it. First thing we see is the WWF champion Psycho Sid. He is facing, in all his sweaty glory, the WWF Intercontinental Champion Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Neither title on the line in our opening match. JR says that Sid finds himself at a crossroads this Sunday, possibly etching his name into immortality by beating Bret Hart at In Your House, It's Time, a show that was very much initially meant to be Vader's show. Otherwise, why is it called It's Time? It's a weird thing to do.
It's Sid time, because I'll tell you this for free. He looks fantastic with the Winged Eagle. He looks... When he came out, I actually went, "Ooh, bloody hell, Sydney, you look fantastic, mate."
We all thought that. You forget, actually, how much that Winged Eagle suits Sydney.
Yeah, it really does. The Winged Sydney,
we call it the Winged Sydney in this house. Sid, as Hunter comes towards the ring, Sid can't be asked to wait. He attacks Hunter on the ramp and boots him all the way to the ring. Hunter gets fuck all. Military press from Sydney, clothesline to the outside from Sydney, dropped on the barricade by Sydney. Hunter gets back in the ring and begs off before doing a flare flop into the corner. Lovely little homage to Ric Flair. Choke slam, power bomb. Hunter rolls out of the ring post power bomb and takes a count out win after just shy of 3 minutes. They absolutely job out the secondary champion here, I'm afraid, Jack.
Yeah, it's this weird, very weird, because you're trying to establish Sid as this big monster heel, but obviously they're all chatting one more time because he's battered Hunter Hearst Helmsley, who is detestable as a character at the time. I'd loathe to say it, but instead of Hunter, could not have like Davey or Owen or who else? Goldust. I know we'll see Goldust in a different form, but someone other than Hunter could have been in this spot.
Because especially that Hunter has a title match on Sunday. He's defending the IC title in your house against Mark Mero. So why make him look like a bit of... Obviously on Superstars, he gets a good run out against Bart Gunn. But then Bart Gunn nearly beats him. He just gets absolutely clattered here.
We'll have to wait and see, unless they're doing some kind of crisis of confidence story leading up to his appearance at In Your House It's Time. But this, I can imagine this at a house show, but it was odd booking for a televised product.
Very odd. Now, throughout the night, we get little cutaways of the story of Mankind and Undertaker and moments during their feud where it has gone too far, like the bit on Raw during the Battle Royal from a few months back where they are brawling in the backstage area. And we get little segments throughout the night that sort of show you the more violent moments of the Undertaker Mankind story ahead of what feels like a story ending match between the two, a feud blowing off type thing, but it's certainly not that. But that's what we're building towards.
Mm. Yeah, it's a strange one because, like you said, the whole night is building this, like you said, a feud ending style match, and to have it on Raw rather than the pay-per-view seems odd, but then you've got to remind yourself Monday Night Wars, it's anything to get a boost in the ratings, really, isn't it? So if this was 1996 and you heard, oh, remember those two bangers between Undertaker and Mankind, they're having another one, no holds barred, on Raw, you'd be tempted to tune in.
You would. To our next match, though, is neither Undertaker nor Mankind. That's later tonight.
Nope.
It's Goldust versus Bart Gunn next. Goldust walks to the ring, Vince says we won't see Goldust in any Christmas movies, certainly not Jingle All the Way. Which, despite being topical because it's Arnie's new film and it's the number one in the box office, it is strange to plug a movie that features a WCW wrestler.
Yeah, I don't know if Vince was just like, who's the big elf? I want to make him champion.
I could book him better. You can't, mate.
You can book him about the same.
Yeah, it's fair to middling. Vince remarks on Goldust's histrionics. I am 39 and a slither before 40, and I looked that word up.
And do you have the Oxford Dictionary definition there of histrionics?
Histrionics means his dramatic, attention-grabbing behaviour. Love that. Going to find a way to get histrionics into something I do in the weeks to come.
Even if you don't use the word, if you exhibit displays of histrionics, I think that would count.
Yeah, if I do a Dalton Castle cosplay, I can... use my history.
Oh, I'd love that. Oh, can I be one of you boys?
Always, mate. You can be both of them. Commentary put over Bart Gunn as being buttock-clenchingly close to winning the IC title on Superstars had it not been for the dastardly Billy Gunn. But the guns will explode on Raw next week, like an NRA conference. Goldust throws gold dust in Bart Gunn's eyes to get the early advantage.
Oh, naughty.
Like a bit of gold mist. JR. JR says Bart is seeing more spots than Cruella de Vil, which everyone heartily laughs at. 101 Dalmatians in cinemas now.
Did you notice this week that... I don't know if he was just toning it down, but it felt like Jim Ross has completely given up being a heel already.
Oh, no, no. There were points where he was a bit of a dick, where I think Vince McMahon was remarking on how Jim Ross calls himself the best play-by-play analyst, and JR's going, yeah, you're right, I am. And that's why I'm going to interview Bret Hart later on, not you. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
There was a little bit. I think he mentions the fact like, yeah, well, I'm out here all night tonight, not just for a bit. I'm out here for the whole hour.
He's a workhorse, as Jim Ross in 1996.
He's definitely, he works a whole hour. God love him. But you're right in the sense that he's eased it up a bit, and I'm glad.
Yeah.
Because I find it distracting when the commentators, all they do is try and get themselves over.
Yeah.
You're there to get the wrestling over.
Exactly, yeah.
Stop it. It's easy. It's easy, this wrestling thing. Don't know why more people don't do it.
Sit around, kid. I'll teach you something.
Dead. It's a piece of piss, this wrestling thing. I don't see what anyone complains about. Goldust sends Bart going to the outside. Bart is fighting back despite being partially blind by the dust. Billy Gunn is watching backstage. He says he carried Bart Gunn and promises to whip his tail to Texas, all the way back to Texas next week on Raw. The guns collide. I like the little picture of Billy Gunn.
Yeah. It's just a... we'll come back to that at the end of the
we'll
match.
Loop back. Goldust dominates through the break, but Bart lands a bulldog post-break to get back into the fight. Finish comes in a stupid manner. Gunn goes for a crossbody. Completely misses. He seems to land and tweak his leg. Goldust therefore follows up with a chop block, which is now super effective. It gets a 3. Fuck's sake, Bart. You've ruined it again. Billy Gunn marches to the ring, gets on the microphone, and tells Bart Gunn that he is truly nothing without him. Bart fires up and lands a couple of blows to the boat race of Billy before sending him running to the back. They will fight next week.
Yeah, you're saying there, Billy coming out and grabbing the mic, he said the exact same prayer that he did picture in picture, but only this time Bart could hear it. And I was like, oh, you'll get a bit better on the mic, Billy. And I like the fact he was dressed like he was in the Truth Commission as well. So that was nice.
He's having to mix up his look a bit so he doesn't look like a cowboy anymore.
Yeah. I thought, again, not that it wasn't very good, because Goldust was looking fired up. And as we know, Goldust and Bart Gunn are two legit tough old big bastards. But the booking of it, like, it was a dominant win for Goldust, but all the focus was on Bart Gunn and Billy Gunn, and the fact that, like you said, Bart Gunn lost to a chop block to the knee. It was a...
Wasn't very good, was it?
Wasn't great,
no. Good, Your Honour. Backstage, Justin Hawk Bradshaw and Uncle Zebekiah are getting pumped up for their handicap match against Jesse James. James talks about being in Desert Storm. Zeb says, that's nothing. I was in Vietnam for 11 months and that's true hell, like you're going to experience. Slightly different hell, I would assume. Wrestling. Justin then promises that Jesse will be squealing like a cow what's had the branding iron stuck on its booty.
Yeah.
Me told.
I'm just watching it all, just like, look at these sweaty men. I can barely hear what they're saying.
They were very sweaty men, weren't they? The match that was built from last week with Jesse James, sick of Justin Hawk Bradshaw and Uncle Zeb being cheaty boys. So instead of giving Zeb the opportunity to cheat on the outside, he's in the match officially. I quite like that little setup. It's nice.
It's a nice setup until you remember that the match between Hawk Bradshaw and Jesse James last week was shite. So adding Zeb to the mix, we'll see.
Will the inclusion of Dutch Mantel help things? Well, the answer won't shock you. Todd Pettingill reflects on the brilliance that has been the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters Tournament, a montage set to soft music. Everybody involved genuinely seemed to have a lovely time playing with the Karate Fighters over the last few weeks. And then Todd gives us a very dramatic rundown for the head of the final. I loved this. God love Todd Pettingill, who says what a great time it's been, and ahead of, and it's time to think about the final. And then he does a slight turn to the left as the lights dim, and he is just in a spotlight as he runs down the karate fighters themselves that people could choose from, with all the sincerity of announcing the winner of the Eurovision Song Contest. I was like, I enjoy that.
I'm with you. I love this because it's how a tie-in should be. Like you said, the soft music over the highlights package. They're taking piss. They're having fun with the idea of the sponsorship and like acknowledging that this is a bit ridiculous without ever denigrating the product and doing the hard sell. It was a brilliant bit of a salesmanship by Todd Pettingill. He's worth his weight in gold.
Really,
fucking love
is.
Him.
You can have fun without taking the piss. And Todd Pettingill walks that line magnificently here. Cyberfist, Headstone, Tiger Ninja, Samurai Ninja. Four of the things you can eat on the Butterfield diet plan. Jerry Lawler and Sable must choose which of the fighters they want next week in the tournament final on Karate Fighters Monday, a.k.a. Raw the night after In Your House It's Time. We're going to have a live final between Jerry Lawler and Sable as it stands.
I can't believe that they're at a live final for it. Fantastic.
They better not cheat me and do something silly and pretend backstage. I want it in the ring in front yeah. of an apathetic audience or my money yes. back. Thank you.
And I want Sable to cut a live promo unprompted. That's what I...
I wanted to hold up the Karate Fighters trophy and go, all these legends that fought for this, and they can all kiss my ass.
I'm igniting the flame of the sport of karate fighters. I refuse to be handed the torch of an organization that died. All right. Sorry, I really like that Shane Douglas promo.
It's a great promo. It's a good promo. I like that. And then he starts calling people dick. I think that's fun too. Ric Flair's a poo-poo head. Shane Douglas, 1997. Handicap match time. It is Justin Hall Bradshaw and Uncle Zebekiah taking on Double J. He heads to the ring singing his theme song, but it's used as subterfuge. As he gets towards the chorus, he switches it up to go, I can't wait to fight Justin Bradshaw and Zebekiah. And he gets in the ring and jumps them. Right, and they weren't expecting it because in their heads they were humming the song.
I mean, it was super effective because Jesse James single-handedly kicked fuck out of both of these fellas.
It was.
He battered them. He battered them.
Amazing work by Double J. Early advantage to him. A rogue bulldog, however, not the one that we like, puts Bradshaw back in charge.
I love that. Keep singing it. It's beautiful.
Did you say you needed a bulldog? No, the move. I'm a move. No, you're not. You're a person. Oh, no, I'm having an existential crisis.
You need me to be alone with your baby? Well, I can do babysitting, but it's £5 an hour and I'm allowed to watch whatever I like as long as I don't get frightened. And I'm helping myself to fridge contents.
Come back from your night out at the bingo. The baby's crying. Bulldogs watching fucking when dogs attack. At full volume, and he's eating a big Scooby-Doo style sandwich. £30, please.
When dogs attack. Go ahead, bat him, you fucker.
When animals attack magicians.
Oh, watch out, Siegfried and or Roy. There's a big cat there.
Big cat there. Oh, shit, they're back early. All right. Yeah, baby won't sleep.
But now in Bulldog, though, there was actually no ingredients for a butty, so it's just a loaf of bread buttered. And he's eating it in one.
It's my favourite bread sandwich.
I did like you asked, yeah, baby, you know, he's grizzly, so I gave him a fag and a bath roll, and he's still not happy.
I did exactly what you said. I'll put the turkey in the oven for you at gas mark 5 when the baby's asleep. Davey, why is a turkey in the child's crib? Oh, I've made a terrible error.
Oh, Vlad to be self in it again.
Bulldog, says the parents. Oh, Bulldog. Don't trust me. Can I go play Doom now?
I'm saving up to buy a screwball scramble.
Oh, Tom's got it. It's brilliant. Press the buttons and watch the ball move around the fucking screwball scramble. I'm saving up to buy a Hogan blender.
Tom's dare me to stick me willy in it.
He says, stick me willy in it, he'll give me 30 quid. If I give me 30 quid, he says, if I stick me willy in it, he'll let me look at his jazz bags.
Not the good ones, though, the spent ones.
The really crunchy ones. Right. welcome back. Zebekiah gets tagged in. And Jesse James immediately puts him in a small package and nearly gets pinned. Bradshaw breaks it up, though. James knocks Zeb off the apron. Very slow spot here where James gets whipped into the corner. And it's almost like they forget briefly what they're doing because he's in the corner being very gingerly held by Zeb. And then he ends up booting Justin, who's coming towards him, and then elbowing Zeb twice, who doesn't move. And then Jesse grabs him by the head and properly punches him to knock him down. And then gets a side slap for his trouble. The whole spot looks a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think uncomfortable is definitely the word. A malfunction at the junction. Actually, shoot.
That's exactly as it should be. Anyway, the end comes, thank God. Justin Bradshaw tries to get Zeb to crack Jesse with the branding iron. But, oh, talking of malfunctions at the junction, Zeb misses and hits Bradders instead. Double J gets the win off the miscommunication. 1, 2, 3. And Jesse J has beaten Justin Hawk Bradshaw and Uncle Zebekiah. He leaves the ring very quickly, wanting to get as far away from this match as humanly possible. Post-match, Bradshaw then clobbers Zebekiah and levels him with a clothesline from hell before branding him for good measure. Is this the end of Uncle Zebekiah?
I can't remember. I assume so.
I don't think...
I should know. It's not like I wrote a big list on managers. I think for the Uncle Zebekiah bit, I was like, he was Uncle Zebekiah for a bit. And then he was Zeb Coulter, which was, that was a bit problematic. That was basically the whole entry.
So, yeah, you kind of very briefly focused on that and then just moved on to, the very dodgy Zeb Coulter years of him. So, in terms of what happens next, he does indeed step away from the WWF at this point. He will get released this year. I don't know whether it's like in the next week or the week after, but he is no longer on the books for the company as we enter 1997.
I'm interested to see what happens with Bradshaw going forward, because as we know, there's going to be some new blackjack at some point, Tom, but I don't think that's for a little while yet. So
all the ingredients are there.
Yes, they are. Jesus Christ. What a tonic that is. Oh, this was a shite match. This was not good. The booking was bad. I am glad that Bradshaw is free of Zebekiah because this run has been shite. Double J looks crap too, mainly because, although he'll tell you differently himself, he's not a great worker in ring. Far better than I could ever be with any training because, again, he's a Hall of Famer. But the power of Jesse James is either in tag work or on the mic. He's very charismatic. Expected him to do a kind of white meat babyface singles match before he becomes the Road Dog. Weak sauce.
It's the weakest of sauce for Jesse James this evening. Raw is brought to you by Sega Saturn. Buy a Saturn for Christmas. Get 3 free games. Dear God, please buy a Sega Saturn. We have literally staked the company on this. Please buy a Sega Saturn. Yeah, it's a tough Christmas for Sega Saturn.
Yeah. What's that, Nintendo? 64 bits? Yeah. Oh, and Mario's there. Right. Please buy a Sega Saturn. We priced this too high.
There's a Sonic game coming out, is there? Yep. When? In a minute? Any minute now? We just finish it off? Yep. Oh, wait, hang on, no, we've just scrapped the whole concept. We're starting again. Okay, when's it out? When's what out? The Sonic game. We're not making a Sonic game. You just said you were.
No. Said we've made a Sonic
that's
game.
That's not a lie. Yeah. And that is the story of Sonic Extreme for the Sega Saturn.
Tom Campbell deep dive comes in.
I deep dived.
I know you
had deep dived. Bloody deep dived into that bag of shite. It looked really fun. I'd have played the shit out of it, but alas and alack, we never got it, Jack. Jim Ross is in the ring, and he brings out his good friend, Bret the Hitman Hart. Bret looking strong in all denim. I am delighted to look at this Bret Hart fashion selection because, dear God, in the run-up to Christmas, I spent far too long looking at Bret Hart wearing Batman T-shirts and jean shorts. I'm relieved to see Bret Hart looking like a normal human being.
Yeah, because when I saw your deep dive on Bret Hart's return, I was like, why have they given it to Tom? Tom doesn't... Not that you don't like Bret Hart, but I'd hardly consider you a fan. Give it to me. I won't be biased.
That's probably why we didn't.
Yeah, probably.
I did start the deep dive by saying, look, he is genuinely one of the best ever. But this year was... A mixture of... Lots of nice comments from people going, really enjoyed the trip down memory lane, and a lot of people who have told me to fuck off and die. So I think that's sort of what you reach for when you make an opinion piece that long, is a little bit of both.
Possibly, Tom, but like all of your loving colleagues have been telling you for years now, stop reading the comments.
These weren't comments. These were people who I respect, not the fuck off and die one. But there were people who in real life came up to me and went, I disagree with you. And I was like, that's great. Because it's only my opinion.
And that's fair,
and I
then.
I tell them they're wrong.
And then you punch them in the neck and you leg it.
I put their shirt over their head and I punch them in the gut.
Fuck off, you dweeb.
And then I slowly hit them with the tire iron for 10 hours. Yep. That's the Bret Hart offense of 2010.
Yeah.
Go watch it. Bret Hart, remembering Bret Hart's disastrous 2010 return. It's not completely disastrous, but go watch it and have a lovely time. Anyway, here comes Bret Hart looking lovely in double denim. Bret says things in the WWF get crazier and crazier. As we recap the attempted Pillmanizing of Bret Hart from the other week, JR even calls it Pillmanizing.
It's been referenced on commentary as Pillmanizing, but this is them putting it out there as an official term in the world of the WWF. So
I didn't know that. I must have missed the word Pillmanizing. I didn't realize that became known as Pillmanizing so soon after.
Oh, yeah. I had always assumed it was one in hindsight because of how famous the angle was. It's like, oh, remember when they did that? Blah, blah, blah. But like you said, within a few weeks of doing it, it's part of the link.
It really is. Also, we've got the shenanigans from the London Arena that we recap as well. Bret tells Psycho Sid that all he's thought about is becoming WWF champion again. When you snap, says Bret to Sid, people call you Psycho. When I snap... they'll call me World Wrestling Federation champion. Bret promises Sid that he'll be excellently executed at In Your House. I thought this was a fantastic bit of business.
I thought it was good as well. He was fired up. He didn't ramble. Obviously, you know, the bar's low for a Bret Hart promo until 1997. Boy, ooh, let me tell you something. But this feels like a precursor to that because he did seem a bit agitated. He's like, I'm going to snap. I'm going to batter you, you big curly-haired lummox. Yeah. This isn't going to be sportsmanship. I'm going to try and break your pelvis, you twat. I thought it was really good. It was to the point. It was quick, and he was wearing double denim. So 10 out of 10.
No notes. 10 on 10. We come to the main event. It's Mankind versus The Undertaker. Before that, though, we get two little VTs. The first is that strange clip, once again, of Mankind in the desert in Dubai, cross-legged, playing in the sand, telling Uncle Paul he wants to go home.
Poor little fella.
And we also get a video of the WWF geeks, who, as we now know, are high-up people within the WWE system. They're in a locker room trying to determine whose locker room it is. They see a big old boot and the one says, oh, that's Yokozuna's boot. To which they go, Yoko doesn't wear shoes. Oh, what fun they're having. That's the whole bit. It's not even me being a dick. Yeah. That's the bit.
Vince McMahon even teed this up by referring to them as George and Adam. He was like, oh, George and Adam. And I cut to them. I was like, oh, for God's sake. I know this lasts at least until the Slammies. Fuck knows when it ends. Jesus.
I always like it when wrestling promoters, particularly billionaire wrestling promoters, do things that represent the fans.
Yeah. To be fair to Vince McMahon, he has always shown contempt for the fans. He's never flip-flopped.
He's been consistent. It's the one thing he's been consistent in.
Yeah. You're all a bunch of dickheads. Like, it's like, I don't get it. When wrestlers just like, oh, look at these fucking marks out here. It's like, well, don't you want that?
You've all paid to see me. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite like you.
Yeah.
I remember...
Brought the kids. They're having fun.
I remember being at a TNA wrestling show in like 2010. And Bully Ray was there. And Bully Ray was going, you're all pieces of trash. And me and my mate Lee going, yeah, we are. We're the worst. Cheers, Bully.
I've had one smarky moment in my life. It was at a WWE house show in Liverpool years ago. And it was Harry Smith, DH Smith versus Chavo Guerrero. But me and my mates being WCW guys, we were like, Chavo, 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 the only ones. And he turned around and went, I don't need your help. And we were like, hey.
So what? You were in the same room as the son of Bulldog again?
I looked differently then. Would not have been aware, yeah. I'm the man of 1,000 faces. I'm the Dean Marco of being a chameleon.
I like the idea of a man of 1,000 faces and it's just you with a series of wigs on. Same facial expression, like blonde wig, black haired wig.
It's like, change your glasses. No, I won't be able to see.
My new character is Peter Incongrenable. You just take your glasses off.
Yeah, and squint a lot. And I look like Clint Eastwood.
You do look like,
but in a blonde afro wig.
You're a bit like Robert De Niro when you do that.
I'll take that.
Robert
thank
De Niro-esque. Yeah, yeah. Right, here we go. Main event.
Right, let's
Undertaker
get to
Undertaker Mankind, no holds barred. Taker controls from the off with a bloody old school, or as it's called at this point, probably primary school, and a choke slam. Picks up Mankind for the tombstone, but here's the executioner to stop that bullshit. Undertaker chases him to the back as we go to a commercial break. But don't worry, when the break ends, they are fighting ringside by the steel steps. Undertaker is trying to break the Mankind mandible claw hand with the steps by putting his hand, taking the steps apart. He puts the hand on the step, gets the other step, and goes kadung on Mankind's hand. Yeah. And Mankind squeals like a pig. In agony as his hand seems to be shattered into 1,000 pieces. Mankind chop blocks Undertaker back in the ring to turn the tide. The commentators then start plugging Undertaker versus Executioner that'll take place on Sunday in Armageddon Rules.
Pray tell, Tom, what are Armageddon Rules?
Armageddon Rules, if my memory serves, it's pinfall and then you've got 10 seconds to get back to your feet. It's essentially a Texas death match.
Yeah, yeah. And keep going until we can't continue. It's the referee's discretion. Like you said before, as we were building up to this, the fact that they've positioned this Mankind versus match is like, oh, you know, this is the end of the trilogy after the Boiler Room Brawl and the Buried Alive match. And this is like a feud ending thing on Raw. And then Undertaker's going to fight the number two of the group on pay-per-view. Yeah. It's a bit odd.
In hindsight, it should have been Executioner here, Mankind at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, probably. But like we were saying before, Monday Night Wars and the thinking, we need to get eyes on the product. And if people watch this for free, they'll be like, ooh, if that was a good match, Undertaker Executioner, if that's safer in your house, that'll be better.
Terry Gordy, so how could it miss? Oh, it does. Outside the ring, Mankind lands an elbow drop off the apron onto Taker's leg resting on a steel chair. JR says, I heard a pop. As he lands, so Undertaker's possibly done his leg in. He hasn't, he's fine. Taker retaliates with a body slam onto the Spanish announce table as we go to break. We're still not getting much announce table action, so this came as quite a cool bit.
Yeah, because I think we've only had two table breakages so far over the last year. Is this the first ever Spanish announce table spot?
Ooh.
Potentially.
I hadn't thought of that. I think it might be.
Because obviously there's Diesel throwing... It was Diesel throwing Brett, was it, into the actual announce table. And then was the Sean versus Mankind, was there something that was either through an announce table or just our table, I want to say.
I think the Sean Mankind one was through the American announce table, through the English announce table.
Yeah, so this might be the first ever Spanish, even though it didn't break, the first ever Spanish announce table bit, because as we know, Carlos Cabrera and Hugo Savinovich are going to be... They're going to be whipping boys for the next few
really,
years.
They really, really are. Bless them. Back from break, Mankind is brandishing a chair, which he gets booted into his face for good measure. Taker goes for a tombstone, but Mankind turns it into the mandible claw. Taker then lifts up Mankind and drops him to counter it. So basically, he's got him locked in the mandible claw. And Undertaker looks like he's fading, but he somehow manages to lift Mankind off the ground and sort of very awkwardly drops him into the corner, like just deadlifts him and just dumps him. Desperate.
On commentary they said, clearly he'd worked over Mankind's fingers that he couldn't get the claw in properly. So from a KVA point of view, I'll allow this.
I will allow it.
I will allow this as the judge, jury, and executioner, not that one, of all wrestling.
He lands a tombstone moments later, and it's an awkward one because I think he picks him up and he spends quite a bit of time sort of getting him in position because there's a point where Mankind's head is very low to the ground and Undertaker has to do some mad reshuffling to bring him up so he doesn't have his own skull caved in, shoot style. Tombstone lands and Undertaker gets the three count as clean as you can in a no-holds-barred match. But there is no time to celebrate because here comes the executioner. He jumps the Undertaker and puts him in that fucking stupid neck grip, which is apparently his finisher. The weird, like, resting his hand on the neck move.
Yeah. I went to write... I was meant to write, executioner runs in and locks the crap spike sleeper thing on Taker, but I accidentally wrote crab. So he locks the crab spike sleeper thing.
Which I think's even funnier.
But, I mean, to be fair, I don't know how much of this was piped in, but there was loud boos as Raw went off the air with Undertaker getting crabbed out by the executioner.
I'd like to think that they were legit boos and people were invested in Terry Gordy, but...
I hope so.
But the last shot we see is Undertaker just getting neck gripped to death. He just looks like he's woke. It looks like he's just having a very dribbly nap.
And Terry's holding him going, don't worry. Just ease off. Ease off,
you little cheeky devil. Ease off. And that concludes Raw.
Yeah. A mixed bag. I've put here that half decent. The first three matches weren't much to write home about, but the main event saved it. But again, like we've been saying for months now about Raw, storyline progression was focused, made sense. We got a good Bret Hart promo. We've got an angle for Billy versus Bart, which although I'm not really looking forward to, they're trying something with the lower card going in for next week. They still got, I think, is it another week or two before the pay-per-view as well? So in terms of building stuff, decent, but from an in-ring... Apart from the main event, not great.
I think it's all sort of... It's a weird one that December in every year in WWE's calendar always has this tendency just to flag just because it's the end of the year and everyone's winding down. And so there always just seems to be this weird lull. And it feels like post this in your house, we're going to be in quite the lull period until... We get sort of midway through January, and this feels like this is what the lull period's all about, sort of trying out some mid-card stories and sort of finishing off some storylines that have just ticked over, like Mankind and Undertaker. I thought it was a good, not great match. You know, not the best in their feud by a long shot, but certainly one of them. I thought the handicap match was a bit crap. I thought the way you treated the IC champ was a bit crap. think Vince. Yeah. The Goldust and Bart Gunn was there. And then Bret Hart said some words. That was Raw, basically.
But, I mean, I've been looking forward to this since I started on this pay-per-view. I imagine you've been the same. We are weeks away in the timeline from 1997.
Oh, we've made it. Oh, there is some good stuff around the corner in 1997.
There's still going to be a lot of shite, but the good is going to be very, very, very good.
Certainly is.
Keep the faith, brother. Keep the faith.
Any good that you want to plug, brother?
No. I'm starting a new big project, one that has been asked for by fans on the channel for a long time. It's a new ranked project because I finished the big documentary style script just before Christmas. That's been handed off. So I spoke with Pachitia, said, what about this? And he went, yep, people have been wanting that for a while. I want to do this. So I'm going to start chunking that on soon. And apart from that, just same old. Keep reading cultaholic.com. The Hold and Give podcast every Wednesday on YouTube and all your podcasty places. And Tom Campbell, what about you, my little ducky egg? A little spag.
Always be your little spaggy little ducky egg. So from now, time you're listening to this, you're going, where is the Cultaholic Wrestling News Podcasts, you filth? Well, fret not, my little ducky egg, for the Cultaholic Wrestling News Podcast now has its own independent podcast feed.
Oh.
So you are getting regular wrestling news podcasts in wrestling news in 10-minute bursts on the Cultaholic Wrestling News podcast feed. Search Cultaholic Wrestling News, get subscribed. It's there. You're going to find loads of fun, exclusive interviews on that channel as well. We're speaking to indie star Vinny Pacifico on there this week. We're having a chat with outgoing Impact Wrestling ring announcer Dave Penza this week. And you'll hear that on the brand new Cultaholic Wrestling News podcast feed as well. So, as well as being subscribed to this one, where you will still find Classic Raw, Classic SmackDown, Classic Nitro, Desert Island Graps, the Full Fat Main podcast, you will also have on a separate news feed, all your 10-minute Cultaholic Wrestling News podcasts every morning when you start your day. I believe you can even ask Alexa to play you the Cultaholic Wrestling News, and it'll play it to you as well. So that's nice, isn't it?
I was genuinely surprised there because I knew this was coming because we spoke about this at the end of last year. Speaking about the business side, like, how do we reach these
keys?
And I'd completely forgotten about it and didn't realise it was actually a motion, so that's nice. Is the monthly news roundup, is that also going to be on
the
this new feed?
The monthly news roundup will be, I believe, that will be on the new feed as well. So you'll be able to find that there. All news flavored things will be there. TBC. But I will let you know, and you'll subscribe to.
I put you on the spot there.
Subscribe to both, just, and you'll never miss it.
That's the magic ingredient right there. Just subscribe to both,
exactly.
You bastards.
And I need to plug this as well. Holy baloney! It is today, the 15th of January. 1 week from Saturday, we're at Box Park in Wembley for the Hooked on Wrestling Cultaholic Royal Rumble Watch Party. Myself, Fraser Porter, Sam Driver, your lovely son Luke is with us as well. Matthew Gregg's joining us too. And the one and only WWE, WCW legend, Fred Ottman, a.k.a. the Shockmaster, a.k.a. Tugboat. Toot. He's going to be joining us as well for a very special Q&A. We've got loads of silly shenanigans planned as we get hyped for the Rumble. And then we're all going to watch the Rumble together on the throughout the night, Saturday into Sunday morning at Box Park in Wembley. Buzzing.
And if you're not going to be at Box Park, stay tuned to cultaholic.com because Aidan Gibbons will be recapping it and I'll be asleep.
That means something really big will happen because Jack Atkins will be asleep.
Yes. Also, just to let you know, let me have a look. I am off. I've got a week booked off at the end of April, and I've just booked off for a week, like 2 weeks after that. So second week in May, last week in April, guarantee two massive things are going to happen in the wrestling world because I'm off. So
very kind of you for the heads up.
Don't worry.
Until we're next back together, he is at Brat Atkins on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we're at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us at a Happy New Year. Get yourself, as a special treat, a Hulk Hogan Thunder Mixer. Love you, bye.
Don't put your willy in.
Definitely put your willy in.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.